This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Sam, we're recording before the close today on Friday, October 8th. We're recording in person, so we're doing this face-to-face. First time we've seen each other since the commodity roundtable we did back in July.
It's nice to see you again, Jeffrey.
Yes. First Monday Morning Minutes podcast we've done in person, though.
That's right. Hopefully, depending on how you look at it, hopefully it's a start of a new beginning or... not the start of a new beginning.
Yes. Well, let's get into markets. It was a crazy week, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we got the payroll numbers today, as we gave the heads up on last week. Looking around the board right now, it looks like risk assets are up across the board. S&P 500 is up, let's call it 75 basis points on the week-to-date basis. That's led by energy again. That's a common theme that we've been talking about each week here, is energy again leading the way. On the opposite, that's energy's up about just over 4% so far on the week-to-date. The laggard here is going to be healthcare and real estate, both down about 30 basis points or so thus far on the week. Moving over to fixed income, we've got the 10-year treasury, which had a trade in a pretty big range this week. It's up 14 basis points as of the time of recording, and we are now above the 1.5% yield mark firmly, and we're in 1.6 land right now. Whether or not it'll close there remains to be seen, but it did sell off about 8 basis points just after the jobs report this morning. So
yeah, we remember last week we were wondering whether it was going to continue above that 150 level, whether we get a couple confirmations, and it did take a couple days. We're a couple days below 150, but I think maybe 160 is the new ceiling or the new floor. I guess that remains to be seen, but certainly broken out above that 150 level.
Yeah, and I do think we'll probably see some more volatility as we get closer to, you know, over the next 30 days or so until we get to the 11th, the November 3rd FOMC meeting. Now, it looks like the 2-year is up also up to above 30 basis points again for the second day in the row. So we'll see if that continues to move. But the long bond, the 30-year treasury yield, is also up 14 basis points thus far on the week. So 1.60 for the 10-year treasury note and 2.2% or 2.17% yield on the long bond there.
Yes, we're still pretty far away from the high of the year, though, on the 10-year, 174 on March 31st. So, you know, we're 14, 15 basis points away from that.
Yeah, and even further to go with the long bond, which has quite a ways to go before it gets back to the highs of the year there.
That's right.
So all of that had a negative impact on the Barclays aggregate. I see that down about 80 basis points on a week-to-date basis. Thus far, and that's dragged down by the IG corporate component within the Bloomberg Barclays aggregate, which does have the longest duration of the three primary components, the other two being agency mortgage-backed securities as well as U.S. Treasuries even. So that definitely is weighing on the corporate sector, which is down about 1.5 points thus far on a week-to-date basis.
Yeah, when you said negative impact, my mind immediately went to that Independence Day movie where they are shooting the missiles at the UFOs and it doesn't hits the shield, and they're like, negative impact.
That's a good one. That's a good classic movie. I might have to bring that back up again before the next Independence Day next year.
So. I think I watched it with my older kids this summer. That was their introduction to it on on or around Independence Day.
Yeah, I don't have kids, but I guess I imagine it must be fun introducing them to classics that you still hold near and dear to your heart. Hopefully, yep. Karate Kid was one of them. Yes. Not the remake, but the original.
They've seen it. They like it. They don't have the same taste that we do, or at least we did back in the day.
Yeah, maybe they have more of an affinity towards Cobra Kai instead. But I still think there's a lot of nostalgia and kitschiness there in Cobra Kai. So I like that one as well.
Yeah.
All right. Following that banter there, let's move over to the commodities. I see the commodity market up about 2% on a week-to-date basis as measured by the Bloomberg Commodity Index. Looking across the board, natural gas actually was pretty much flat this week for the first time in some time. It is up over 120% on the year still. So we've been seeing a little bit of weakness there as some news has come out where particularly with the European markets there, with Russia helping to alleviate some of the previous supply concerns there. So we'll see if that has an impact, continues to have an impact here in the US as well. When we look at WTI crude oil, that's up just over 4% on the week, and gold is flat on the week. But WTI, I will note that it did hit, I believe it hit above $80 a barrel or into the 80 handle at some point this week, but it doesn't look like it's going to manage to close the week. It's closing it with $79 and some change there. And then finally, we've got the Bitcoin roller coaster. Strong week, you know, for Bitcoin relative to the rest of the asset classes. But you and I joke around. It had a 13% week-to-date performance, but sometimes you see that within the day. So maybe it's strong, maybe it's not. But relative to these other asset classes we just talked about, 13% is quite strong for our friend Bitcoin here.
That's right. That's right. And it is a volatile ride, but certainly does have its idiosyncrasy. So, you know, we do use it as a risk barometer, but maybe not an up 13% type risk barometer with S&P up, you know, three quarters of a percent or so.
Yeah. Yeah. So that about wraps up the week in markets. What happened in macro land?
Yeah. Macro land was a pretty quiet week. Tuesday, we did have ISM services number came out for September. Was a surprise increase to 61.9 versus 61.7 prior. Expectations was that for it to drop into below 60, so it was a pretty solid number there, 16th consecutive month of expansion. We don't normally talk politics, but on Wednesday we did get the Senate did reach an agreement to raise the debt ceiling, at least for a couple months up until December 3rd. So this whole rigmarole we went through over the past couple of weeks, I guess we'll start to do that again at the end of November. And I think I saw that T-bill rates immediately fell back down to make the curve flat. But you started to see a little bit of a bump there in December as the market kind of anticipated more of the same problems, I guess.
Yeah, I bet that bump continues to grow through the next couple of months. So let's keep an eye out for that.
That's right. But maybe people are anticipating it a little bit more now, so maybe it won't grow as much.
Yeah.
And then today was the big news. We had Pizza Friday. We had the Mom Farm Payroll Report came out this morning for September. It was a mixed report. The headline number was only 194,000 jobs added, well below expectations of 500,000. I think we were talking about whether, people were saying a 200,000 number would be a decent number, you know, quote unquote, decent number from Powell. So it'll be interesting with the 194, is that still a decent number or not? I guess it's probably close enough to 200 that it would be okay. Also, there were positive net revisions to the previous 2 months of another 169,000. So certainly it seems like that would hit a decent jobs number for the Fed to announce officially the taper in November. Kind of digging into the numbers a little bit more, the government lost 123,000 jobs, mostly from the government education side, which was a negative 161, and possibly the there's some issues about COVID timing and school reopenings, so that added a little bit of noise to the non-farm payroll number. Moving on to the unemployment rate, the U3 unemployment rate dropped to 4.8% from an expectation of 5.1%. It was 5.2% last month, but as we've talked about before, this is the bad kind of the unemployment rate drop, where the workforce number, the people in the workforce, the population in the workforce dropped. which you could see from the labor force participation rate, which fell to 61.6%, and was expected to increase to 61.8%. So that's a pretty sizable drop. That number doesn't really move around that much, but a 0.2% drop in the participation rate is pretty noticeable. And then finally, we did get the underemployment U6 number. That was expected to drop. It did drop to, or I guess there was really no consensus number out there, but was expected to drop, dropped to 8.5% from 8.8% last month. So getting a little bit closer to that maximum employment number, that is the kind of the hurdle for the Fed to increase interest rates, not decrease the taper or increase the taper, decrease their amount of purchases they're doing, but actually to increase the Fed funds rate. So that number is getting a little bit closer, but still a ways away. Even if we did get a 0.3 drop over the next few months, it still would take a while to get to that. What was it like? It was below 7%. I think was the pre-pandemic underemployment rate. So that seems to be the target rate for the Fed.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and as of DEIS 2019, the U6 rate was at 6.8. So you're exactly right on that, just a little bit under 7%. And as we look at the composition, I guess, you know, across some of the labor data that came in today, it's some of it's good and some of it's disappointing. So it's a bit of a mixed bag there. You know, as you pointed out, the U3 drop here was on the declining, you know, the smaller labor force. So that was definitely a disappointment. There was 184,000 individuals that left the labor force. But the good news on that is, you know, the number of unemployed change that went down by 710, you know, outside of that labor force decrease, we also had an increase in the number of people who are in that employed category of just 526,000. So, I mean, that's a pretty sizable increase there. That's not necessarily captured entirely by the non-farm payrolls. As we've mentioned in the past, these two surveys, the one that determines what the non-farm payrolls are and the ones that determine what the number of employed people are based on different methodology. So there is going to be differences there, but there is some a little bit of a positive note there with over 500,000 people that are now categorized newly as employed. So we'll continue to watch this and see how Jay Powell and the FOMC committee looks to spin this latest jobs report into the narrative that they want to present to us on
right.
November 3rd.
That's right. I think it's, you know, you wish that they would kind of split these numbers out and not occur on the same day so you could kind of see which one the market was responding to, which one the market would assign more importance to. But, you know, that's too much to ask, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's the government, right? It's always confusing with the data that they present.
That's right. I mean, why are there so many inflation measures? Let's get on to the topic of the week this week. And this week we want to discuss a quarterly event that could impact the stock market or has tended to impact the stock market, and is dubbed the triple witching. And I was trying to figure out, like, why is it called the witching or the witching hour? And, you know, so I went to the Google and the Wikipedia, and it says that phrase, the witching hour, originated in 1775. But as far back as 1535, the Catholic Church prohibited activities between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. due to fears about witchcraft. And so that's the 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. is what is known as the witching hour. And then that has kind of into finances has morphed into something that is used in financial terms. But Sam, why don't you kind of give us a definition of triple witching and its variations?
Yeah, and that's we thought it'd be a very appropriate topic this week, just given the Halloween month and the witching idea. But I think, you know, as we're looking through this, the idea of assigning the witching, you know, around financial markets came about probably because it sometimes leads to the unexplainable volatility the volatility in prices that you see around these days, lacking any other source that you can see, i.e. there's no macroeconomic data that you can point to as to why, you know, prices either fluctuated up or down pretty significantly, or there's no, you know, geopolitical risk that came out. Instead, you know, people attribute it to this witching hour that we'll be talking about here that really leads to an increase in trading volume because of the witching. And, you know, the witching is loosely defined, or it's defined as the simultaneous expiration of stock index futures. stock index options and single stock options. That would be the triple witching. As you notice, these are all derivatives based vehicles there. But effectively what happens is every third Friday on the quarters, so in March, June, September, and December, you have the simultaneous expirations of these three derivatives across the various indices or single stock options as well. So I'm looking at the calendar here. It would be December 17th is the next time we're gonna have a triple witching that's coming up. In addition to triple witchings, there are also double witchings, and those typically occur on those non-quarter months. So everything in between the March, June, September, and December, where options on single stocks and stock indices expire on also that third Friday of the month. So of course, on those triple witching days, you have the double witchings plus the addition of the stock index future expiries there. And then up until September of last year, there used to be what was known as quadruple witchings, whereby you also had the expirations, the simultaneous expiration of single stock futures, which really began trading as a market back in 2002 on the One Chicago market. But in September of 2020, One Chicago market went defunct, and that market, that single market for single stock futures, ceased to exist, and thereby the quadruple witching ceased to exist. But, you know, in digging around, you know, we saw that there was also, you know, the quadruple witching is still sometimes in use. It's possible that it's also because some major various indices, stock indices, also rebalanced during that period of time. So when I'm looking at this table in front of me, I see that the S&P 1500 US indexes also rebalance on those third Fridays of each quarter. The S&P 1500, I would presume to be the aggregate of the S&P 500, 600, and 400. I don't know why I chose that order to talk about it, but the 600, the 500, and the 400 stock indices rebalance and reconstitute during that, are subject to reconstitution during that period of time, as are the FTSE global indexes and the NASDAQ 100, which only reconstitutes on December. So I guess on that special December period, that's when you would have the quadruple witching within the NASDAQ 100. So the witching hour, you know, Jeff talked about before, as 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. local time, I suppose, as designated by the Catholic Church. With regards to the financial market, it is in reference to the last hour of the trading days, of the witching trading days. So a little bit of background there for you to think about.
Yeah, and why is this important? I think that because you do have a lot of these derivative instruments maturing or expiring, and they all coincide, you get a lot of trade volume and a lot of volatility, certainly a lot of trade volume, and you could get a lot of volatility in the underlying positions during that hour as people try to, you know, as the Wall Street tries to cover their positions or allow their positions to expire or to roll their positions. Or they need to reposition because they need to you know, readjust their allocations. And so, you know, really there are times where that there's a lot of that volatility there. And you know, that in you, if you think about the investors having to do that, market makers having to do that, and then you also have the market makers having to do the same thing, but take the opposite position to reposition their hedges. And so there can be a lot of volatility in the last hour of trading. Certainly the you know, the market makers are trying to do what they can to make their money. So there could be, you know, movements that are immediately reversed over there at the next Monday or they open on Monday. So really there can be a lot of volatility, a lot of volume. And I think it's something that for the uninitiated, and this is kind of why we wanted to bring it up, that if you're a day trader, you probably aren't listening to this podcast, but if you are, maybe, you know, you want to stay away from making outsized moves during that hour because of that higher volatility.
Yeah. So, and also if you're taking a look on a particular day and just trying to make sense of why markets are behaving the way they are, because there's an absence of any real news out there, you know, take a look at your calendar, see if it's that third Friday of the month. And if it's a third Friday of the quarter, then there's probably even more trading volume and potential volatility around that. So hopefully that, you know, we're always looking at human behavior. We're always trying to look for explanations and rationalize actions, right? So this gives you one more data point to look at to see if to help, you know, assuage your thinking, you know, in terms of trying to rationalize.
And if it's not a witching day and you don't know, understand why it's going, just to go with the old, there's more buyers than sellers, or there's more sellers than buyers, even though for anything to trade, there actually be an equal number of buyers or sellers.
Yeah, I guess it's the willingness. There's more willing buyers than there are willing sellers,
right.
Or vice versa.
So that's what we always like to ascribe things to, supply and demand.
That's right. When all else fails, Jeff's got the hand X's, the arm
right.
X's going up there for the old, good old supply and demand chart there. So hopefully that people found that interesting. I'm getting excited for Halloween, even though I don't go trick or treating anymore. For some reason, it still makes me excited and just nostalgic, I suppose. But Jeff, what are we looking at for next week?
Yeah, this next week, again, we're looking at inflation. So we have on Wednesday, we do get the CPI number comes out. Expectation is 5.3% headline, 4.1% core. So still pretty high numbers there with a 5.3. As we've talked about before, I think we expect the core CPI to likely stay above 5% throughout the rest of the year. Also on Wednesday, we get the Fed meeting minutes. Are we going to get any more information or any taper hints? The press conference that Powell let a lot of the taper numbers come out. The mid 2022 came out in the press conference and the Q&A. So was there more discussion about that during the meeting? So we'll find out more. We'll find out more about what the Fed wants us to know about there in the meeting minutes there. On Thursday, we do get the PPI numbers with I wrote in here eye-popping numbers of 8.8%. Expectation for headline and 7.1% for core. That's up from 8.3% and 6.7% last month. So a big increase there in PPI, which, you know, could roil markets a little bit. And then on Friday, we do get retail sales. The headline number is expected to turn negative to negative 0.3%. It was a positive, it was a positive surprise to be up 0.7% last month. But X auto is expected to fall, but we still remain positive. So a little bit still strong there at a positive 0.5%, but down from 1.8% last month. And I mean, that's about it. But for the week, I think it could be a pretty quiet week, but a lot of it's really going to depend on the Fed minutes and whether those inflation numbers come out as expected, or I guess there's always that potential for it to come in and just disappoint.
Yeah, I'm actually looking more for some upside surprises out of inflation. Go back to what we were seeing a few months ago. So that's my expectation there.
If I said disappoint, is that higher inflation or lower inflation?
I guess it depends on what the narrative is that you're trying to fill. So
that's right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for this week, Sam. Thanks to everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Monday Morning Minutes. You can pick us up every Friday before the bell. Don't forget to subscribe, so you don't miss an episode. You can find this podcast anywhere you pretty much get your podcast downloads nowadays. So if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, feel free to hit us up on the Twitter at dlineminutes.com or at dlineminutes, or you can email us at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, and if there's any podcast apps that we're not on, let us know. We'll have Paul at it. You can find more information about DoubleLine on our website, doubleline.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/doubleline capital. Dropped a most recent episode of our channel 11 news with portfolio manager Ken Shinoda and a special guest, recurring guest, Jeffrey Sherman. It's titled Now What, they kind of talk about as we've been talking about, we're at these weird inflection points. So what's going to happen from here? Don't forget to subscribe to Sam's other podcast with Jeff Sherman called The Sherman Show. You can follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Talk to everyone again next week.
Thanks, everyone.
This audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by the listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person or a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Securities mentioned are not a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell. These securities were chosen based on their active overweights within the representative portfolio to explain portfolio positioning and the forward-looking view of the market that drives such positioning. For the preceding year, beginning August 24th, 2021, a list of all positions is available by request at media@doubleline.com. Equities may decline in value due to both real and perceived general market, economic, and industry conditions.